This is Flight Training the Way I See It with Mike Schiffer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode, the November episode of Flight Training the Way I See It with your host, that's me, Mike Shiflett with CFI Bootcamp here in Miami Beach, Florida. I'd like to welcome you to the podcast if you're new. If you've been around for a while, you kind of know how it goes. We're a show about news, opinion, a lot of opinion, and news, right? So we've got that going for us. So I'm going to give you the show outline here right now. I'm going to tell you what we're going to do. So over the next 20 minutes, you can sit back and in your car, wherever you are, take a reading, or not reading, but listening to the podcast, and sort of get ready for some really important, fun topics, good topics this month. The first one is we're going to talk about the January CFI class in Las Vegas that we have coming up. I wanted to tell you that it's filling up, so I wanted to talk a little bit about that and why that might be a good idea for some of you if you're looking for flight training. The second topic is going to be the FAA is doing work on new airport-specific runway incursion avoidance videos. So I'm going to talk about that and how you can see those and what those are. The third thing is a really good thing, and this has been in the works for a very long time. It's the weird Class G airspace is almost gone, plus other space regulations you may not know. So that's interesting. They got that. These are the odd items, I call them. And then we'll look at our pro tips this month. So we've got three pro tips. So we've got that like usual for you. So that'll be what we're going to cover in this next 25 or so minutes. So let's get going. Let's talk about the January CFI class in Las Vegas. It is beginning to fill up. So we work with Chenault Flying Service there, which is located at VGT, Victor Golf Tango, North Las Vegas Airport. Great location. And it's good weather, of course. It's great weather. And Chenault has predominantly a DA-40 fleet, although they have 172 G1000s and some more coming. So we'll be able to take care of the 172 crowd as well. But if you want to learn a DA-40 or have that in your arsenal of another airplane you can fly for a flight school that might have them, then I would go there. The other thing we do is we teach that class as a Chenault flight instructor. So we are approved under Part, well, I am approved under Part 141 to teach their syllabus. And what we do is we do our program with their syllabus, which means that they can offer their students VA benefits. So, and other sorts of perks that come with that. So you have to do the full program. There's no separate ground 141 program you can do anywhere. That's, for whatever reason, the FAA has not broken that out yet. It's not a pilot course, so you have to do the whole thing. But if you are getting paid by the VA, you might like that. So there's a chance to use that. Now the classroom only holds 10, about that. And we already have about 5 seats, maybe more taken. So on our side, from CFI Bootcamp, we have either 3 or 4 in that class right now, and they have between 3 and 4 more. So we only have a few seats that are really going to be left for that class. There are plenty of remote spots, so at 3 or 4 of those. We can do like 3 or 4 of those. That class, by the way, is going to be January 8th through the 14th from 8 a.m. to about 3 in the afternoon. And yes, you can tell your significant other, if you have one, that you have to go to Las Vegas. You must. So you have to say that. Remember, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, but what happens on Facebook stays on Facebook, just so you know. All right, so if you want to finish up your CFI before the spring season, which I think a lot of people start thinking about, like, when do I really want to start? Is there a lot of flying in February? Well, it depends on where you are, but chances are no. 80% of the country is like kind of on lockdown for the weather, right? You can fly here a little bit, but the mad rush of people doesn't happen until March, April, when the weather starts to break. The question is, are you going to be ready for that? And if you are like most of us, you'll underestimate the amount of time you need. And then, because remember, 80% of the work is in the last 20% of the job, right? So that's not any less true in flight instructor training. So this may be a good class for a finish up. It may be a good class for you to do. Now, also wanted to mention another thing, which is kind of an important piece we've done. If you don't intend to take a check ride from us, so you're not coming for us for the whole thing, not flight side, we can let you attend just the 7-day immersion class if you've done pre-study using whatever. If you just pass knowledge tests, that's not really good enough because you can pass those and not really know anything, right? If you know the test questions and answers ahead of time, it's not a test, all right? It's just an exercise to get through. So, but if you've done a fair amount of study, like I was thinking about the people in CFI Study Group, which is a Facebook group, and some of the Safe Mentor side, you know, we might, if you've done enough study on your own or done with somebody else and you just need to clean up and finish up, this might be the ticket for you. You'd put in 7 days, and in our immersion class, we do scenarios. So we're all scenario-driven. So basically, we cover the regulations top-down view. We don't read the regulations to you. And then we do scenarios about endorsements. So we take people from rotorcraft helicopter into airplane single engine land. There's a big old onion to peel back, like what's involved in doing that, the training requirements, the endorsements, and then the testing, what's going to be tested. Then we do lesson plan delivery, critique. We do teaching practice. We do a bunch of in-class exercises. We talk about how to teach aerodynamics and how to teach various things. So that class may be something you would, and normally we wouldn't do that. It'd make you have to take the online course. But if you're not going to take a test with us and you do it elsewhere and you've done a fair amount of study, that might work for you. So I just wanted to let you know that. And it's very competitively priced. That class is about $1,300 for 7 days. And you can do part of it by Zoom if you want to. And the experience is quite good because we have a camera there called the OWL3. And it has, it's a very cool camera. So basically on the Zoom or what you see on video, you see the entire class in a fisheye sort of look on the very top of the video, of the one video, rectangle that you would normally see. And then down below on the left-hand side is a camera on the speaker. And then whoever talks, the owl will know and will zoom over to that, pan up and zoom up onto that person. And then there's a built-in microphone and speaker on the owl, so if people ask questions in the room, it's just like, it's very, very close to being their experience. And we don't use any whiteboards except for practice with off classroom time. So we use, everything is virtual. I use a virtual whiteboard through Zoom, so what you see is what the class sees. So the experience is quite good. We use a 65-inch monitor or projector in one case, and whatever you see in the classroom, the people see at home. So it's pretty good. So I want to let you know that. So that's kind of cool. So anyway, if you're interested in doing that, you can go to cfibootcamp.com, look at the calendar. That's at the top of the page, this calendar, and pick the class and see how many seats are left. It's going to fill up pretty quick, so just so you know. Okay, moving off that topic. Are you happy about that? I am. So I want to tell you, though, I thought that was a good idea. Today we had discussed the possibility of letting people come to the class without doing the online course if they've done enough pre-study. And some of you have done that, so good on you if you've done that, right? It's a lot of work. Okay, second topic. FAA is doing a lot of work on new airport-specific runway incursion avoidance videos. So the runway incursion avoidance team at FAA is working hard now to produce some really excellent videos highlighting airport operations with historically more runway incursions. For example, one video is about operations at Portland PDX in Oregon. And they're great for teaching tools. They're for instructors. They're great to have these around. And also AOPA, Air Safety Institute, has also done a lot of work in this area. So to access the AOPA content, you've got to be an AOPA member. But the FAA information is free. So, and they've put a lot of work in those videos. They've animated them. They've done quite a bit of work. So I encourage you to go look at them. Okay, so then the good news, by the way, is that runway incursions and GA accidents are trending downward for the first time in a long time. At all the conferences that I attend, there's usually someone from FAA or NTSB high up, and a common topic is safety. So this almost always ends up with a conversation about accident trends and the number of runway incursions. To shore up your knowledge of runway incursions, by the way, I'm going to give you a little checklist here. So in the PHAC, the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, under Airport Operations chapter, you can read that. It talks about signage, pavement markings, all that kind of thing. And then the second thing is, if you use ForeFlight, watch the video on the Runway Proximity Advisor on ForeFlight.com. This feature tells you when you're approaching a runway and how much runway is left when you enter it, and it also does this verbally. It also announces the runway that you're entering as well, and how much, like example, how much is left. So I think that's very good. We could have used that many years ago. So you can go to, this is a long URL, but if you listen to it again, write it down, or you just go to faa.gov, you'll find it. So basically it's faa.gov/airports/runway_safety. That'll basically get you there, and then /resources. And you'll find resources including runway safety quizzes and sort of things like that are there. And then there's an AC9173B. So AC91-73B, it addresses SOPs for avoiding runway incursions. And you can find that at FAA.gov, just Google the AC space 91-73B. You can watch a YouTube video from the FAA about runway incursion mitigations and avoidance. And you can just find at YouTube. And there's a link there. I have it in the, if you subscribe to our newsletter, which basically this is a video podcast of the newsletter, you would have all these links, right? So if you haven't done that already, go to our website and opt in for that, or send an email to info@CFIbootcamp.com and ask for this particular one if you need it, and we'll send it to you. If you're an AOPA member, you can go to the Air Safety Institute and see what they have in there about runway incursion. So between all those resources, you'll have plenty enough to teach it or to shore up your knowledge on runway incursions. And again, the good news, it's going down. Yay. It's going down. Okay, third topic. The weird Class G airspace is almost gone, plus other airspace regulations you may not have heard about, the odd ones, okay? So let's talk about that. So on our 159th Power Hour, November 18th, we covered graduate level work on airspace and charts. In that hour, I brought up some of these oddities regarding airspace. And here's a few of the lesser known airspace oddities and potential checkride questions, right? In fact, David St. George from SAFE posted in his blog about this very topic. So Class G airspace is one of the, and E has always been the sticker here. And it's gonna become less of a thing here shortly. Yeah, it is. Let me tell you why. Class G airspace in the continental United States ends where Class E begins, in some places as high as, but not including, 14,500 feet. Huh? It can go from the surface up to, but not including, 14,500. So why? That's always the question, right? In our classes, CFI Bootcamp, myself, anything I teach the whys. Because if you don't have the whys, you're just maybe spreading an old wives' tale or something. Don't know, right? So 14,500. Ever ask yourself, why does Class E, or do you even know Class G, why does Class G stop right there? The reason for it is that was called the Continental Control Area, still is the Continental Control Area, airspace above 14,500 in the continental United States. Because when jets first worked on the scene, there wasn't radar everywhere. And so controllers were like, okay, we need an altitude at which, if we put an airplane there, it won't run into any kind of terrain. Well, that's Mount Whitney. It's about a little, it grew a little bit. It's over 14,500 now, but at that time it was like 14,300. There's arguments about that. You can read in the article, I talk about that. 14,494, they say now. So at that altitude, you wouldn't hit anything. So that's kind of a terrain plane. So then after that, the controller could add some measure to that and send you wherever, separate the rest of you by DME on an airway, and then we could have, you know, separation in the flight levels. So, and below that was all uncontrolled airspace. So except for control zones, which were areas around airports and airways. Airways had to be, at that time, controlled. They weren't called Class Echo, but they were called controlled airspace. So they had to be. So I had these channels plowed out everywhere where the Class, essentially E now, would have had to existed. So, but now we see it only in a few places. It's almost gone, I'm here to tell you. And it's on its way out the door sooner than you might think. It was on the West Coast. There was so much of this chopped up airspace all over the place. I'll tell you where you can find some and tell you how to find it. Okay, that's even more important. You as a CFI will love this. So where is this stuff? Let me explain it in words, and then I'm going to give you a place to go. Okay, in words, what it is if there was a Class G airspace, and the FAA, or so it's Class E, but there's Class G that goes from the surface up to but not including 14,500, it's going to be designated in a particular way. There's one of two ways. The first way is you're going to see a blue vignette. So basically it means like a feathered color. So it's cyan. So it's, oh, we call it cyan. I guess I call it blue, but cyan is the color. And then it goes, has a hard sign, and it feathers, like sort of like the magenta vignettes you see around some airports that where Class Echo starts at 700, right? AGL, except for it's blue. And so what the only time you'll ever see that, ever, is if Class G airspace is in the cutout, in the middle of that cutout, or in that cutout, I should say, on the hard side, and that Class G goes from the surface up to, but not including, 14,500 feet. So there are places where you can see it. So let me give you a way to find it and tell you, we can find it anywhere. There's only a few places. It used to be all over the place, and now it's being chopped and put right back into Class Echo. So we're basically going to have a country where Class Echo basically begins at mostly 12, not, well, Class G won't go any higher than 1,200, except for in certain very, very, very select circumstances. Whereas before it was kind of, you know, all over the place. And that means that this one cloud clearance and visibility we need, which is 1 mile, 500 below, 2,000 laterally, 1,000 above, which is only good for Class G from 1,200 AGL to 10,000 MSL in the daytime, is going to be a real, real, real rare case. So anyway, let's talk about that. So about this. So how can you find it? So open 4Flight and take the US and make your sectional chart. And then make sure you can see most of the country. Okay, so zoom it so you can see most of the entire continental US. Okay, now take the layers side. When you go up to the top, on the top left, turn off the sectional chart and turn on the low altitude on the route chart. And when you do that, in New Mexico, you're going to see a brown area. It's like brown. That's it. That is how a low altitude and route chart shows uncontrolled airspace. So then now when you center over that, you'll find it, the brown area. It kind of looks like a rectangle. Then what I want you to do is then turn back on the sectional chart. Then what you'll see is you're going to see the cyan vignette, and you'll see that there. Other places you can find this are in Alaska, up by Mount Denali, if you go, which was Mount Whitney before. If you go up in that general area, you also find some of these cutouts. In addition, you'll find zippered lines. So they look like a little zipper, and it'll have areas where Class E airspace starts at a higher altitude than 1,200 feet. So if you go over Teterboro in the New York, over the Hudson River, you'll see that zippered line where it starts at 1,300 feet and it goes 13 to 7,000. It tells you what the altitude is. And if you look, I can't look at it this second, but it's like that. If you go down South Florida on the left-hand side by Naples, you'll find more of these little cutouts where they might start at 2,700 feet, 1,300 feet, this or that. So these are another little holdover areas. So the question now to answer, the fun question is, why is this happening? So why is all this stuff going away? Well, it was great fodder for tests before. And the reason for it is because IFR traffic is now being sent GPS direct off airway. And so when you're not on an airway, you can't be given a clearance for direct through Class G airspace. It's got to be an E, at least E. So they had to redesignate all this airspace where you can accommodate all this GPS direct. So that's why it's happening. So there you go. So I think that's interesting. Now, we do have some other things to talk about, which I think are more interesting things, right? So why is DME required above flight level 240? Well, it's not always required above flight level 240. It's required above flight level 240 if you're using DME to operate on an airway. If you're not on an airway, you don't need DME above 24,000, but flight level 240. But if you're operating on an airway, then you do. Okay, that's the answer to that. Now, RVSM. RVSM comes into play. We have an examiner down here in South Florida who loves testing RVSM for initial CFIs. And okay, fair enough, but what is it? So if you're going to file an IFR flight plan and going to operate between flight level 290 and 410, your airplane must be equipped to meet the RVSM requirements. Additional pilot training is also required. And there's a difference between ICAO international RVSM training and domestic. Domestic is a whole lot easier. And that's why King Schools can get you a certificate in, what, an hour? If you did the full-on IKO one, it's going to be a grind. It's going to be a while. So when you're operating in these flight levels with RVSM, then the separation the controller can give goes from 2,000 feet to 1,000 feet. Okay, another thing that's not widely known is ATC can assign you a flight level that's in an RVSM altitude or RVSM flight level if they want to. You could ask for it, and they may give it to you, but you have to tell them you're not RVSM equipped, which they'll know by your equipment suffix. But still, so it's possible to still operate there without having RVSM equipment, but ATC has to assign it to you. You really can't file out your flight plan. Okay, you can find more information on that at FAA.gov under air traffic, air_traffic / separation, _standards and then /RVSM, where you could just Google that. Okay, there you go. I gave it to you. It's in our newsletter. Oh, so there's, anyway, additional equipment. Now, also another, as we move out of the, there's additional equipment requirements. Sorry for that. We also talk about oxygen requirements. We talk about airspace. Yes, our DP down here loves talking about that. So do you know the oxygen requirements for under Part 91 to 11 Alpha? I think you do. More than 30 minutes above 12,500, below 14,000, the crew's got to have it. Above 14,000, anytime the crew. Above 15,000, anytime crew and passengers have to be provided with O2. But did you know this? What about pressurized airplanes? That's 91211B. This has been coming up on some of our initial check rides. So let me just read it to you here so you understand it. Above flight level 240, each occupant must have at least a 10-minute supply of oxygen available. Above flight level 250, if the cabin pressure, inside cabin pressure, is greater than 14,000 feet, one crew member must wear a secured and sealed mask with oxygen automatically supplied at all times, unless operating below 410, and each pilot has a quick donning mask that can be reached with one hand and put on within 5 seconds. In that case, neither pilot has to wear the sealed mask. So, third case is when any one pilot leaves the flight controls. Above flight level 350, the other pilot has to wear a secured and sealed mask with oxygen supplied at all times until the other pilot returns to the flight controls. So for the power hour, that particular 159th episode, which you can go to cfibootcamp.com under resources, you'll see the PH power hour catalog or outlines. It's one of those two words. Go there and you'll be able to pick up on the outline at least we had there. So there's that. And let's see. So that's 150. Yeah, the 159. Now, by the way, if you want to see all those power hours, you want to see that in its completion. You can see all of our power hours, which are 1 hour live events we do every Saturday, except for holiday, between noon and 1 o'clock Eastern time. You go to our website, cfibootcamp.com, and you'll find a way to opt in. It's usually a red bar at the top of the page. We're running a special, so it's something else. But if you go, by the time you get this, it'll be back to the red bar. So go there and opt in for the power hour. Then you'll get an email reminder, usually on Wednesday or Thursday, and then you'll get one an hour before the show starts. And then you'll get one right as the show starts to let you know. So you will not miss one. So those shows are always free. If you want to see any of the previous ones, you can see some of the content by that cfibootcamp.com resources and then Power Hour catalog or outline. Otherwise, you have to join our membership site. And that's the big secret in our business is the Power Hour crowd always gets our best deal. So if you go to the website now and try to become a site member, it'll cost you $22 a month, kind of a little pricey, right? But if you become a Power Hour member and get the outline, you'll see there's an offer in there for $9 a month. And it'll get you all of them. It's 160. This will be 161 coming up. So we've done a lot of those. Every imaginable topic in aviation, everything from the mathematics behind 8-sum pylons, why the point pivots, to deep dives and lazy eights, flight instructor marketing. We've done airspace. We've done, there's so much that we've gone through, right? We did, again, graduate level work on airspace and charts. So that's all in there. Something nice to do on a Saturday. It's all free if you go on Saturday. Okay, so that's what you get. So anyway, if you go to find that, you go to cfibootcamp.com, and then under resources, it's called Bootcamp Plus, and you can pick. There's a basic membership. It's free. Gives you like 10 of the power hours. And then you can go ahead and join and get them all. Plus, you get our tribal knowledge videos, a bunch of stuff. So, you know, have a look at that. I think you'll find that to your liking, I think. It's very much people in flight training and flying. This content's very good for them to have. And the show's always entertaining. And it's always live. Except for if I'm traveling. If I'm traveling, I usually pre-record the show, but that's pretty rare. Okay, so let's look at our pro tips, huh? Then we'll finish up with this. So we're just about out of time, so we need to finish up on pro tips. So pro tip number one for you flight instructors, do a risk assessment before every training flight with your student. Make it part of the student's and your culture of safety. This should only take 10 minutes. If it's taking longer than that, people aren't going to do it. So if you use the right tools, you ought to do it. So use the WX briefing, so the weather briefing capability in ForeFlight to step through the weather. And then you want to use a risk assessment tool, flight risk assessment tool called a FRAT, and you can get that for free on iPhone using an application called 172 Performance. It's a blue app. Steve Kleinman is the author of that, and he was the CTO of NetApps. He's in Palo Alto. I know him. He has a TBM 850, and basically this 172 Performance, even if you don't have a 172, get it, because it will calculate performance for the 172 for climb, takeoff, distance, landing distance in an instant, but it has a risk assessment tool in the back of it. And you can get another gauge of, like, is the runway wet? Is this a work flight? You tick the boxes and you'll get a needle that moves from green all the way up to yellow, red, and then purple. If it's purple, I definitely think you shouldn't go. But anyway, it's not an absolute. But between those tools and your own use of the PAVE checklist, you can get a risk assessment for the flight pretty quickly. You can also use 3D view in ForeFlight and profile view in ForeFlight and get really quick analysis of the weather, go, no go, pretty quick, okay? So that's what you want. You want to instill the culture of risk assessment for every training flight. And again, it shouldn't take more than 10 minutes, unless you're making a big all-cross country, then it will take longer, but then it should, right? Then it should. Second thing, it's a fun one. When you're taxiing, you're coming to a full stop, right? Just before the airplane stops, momentarily release the brakes and allow the airplane to coast for a few inches before applying the brakes again. And what will happen is you'll make really smooth stops. Remember, you get the jetway and all of a sudden the captain puts on that thing, brakes really quick, everybody's head goes like this, back and forth like this. Well, that won't happen if you do what I just told you. So let the airplane coast just before you're ready to stop, take your feet off the brakes. Let that either coast to a stop if it can, or if you really need to control it, just modulate the brakes just ever so slightly and it will make a very smooth stop. Yay. Okay, number three, when you're giving or planning on completing a flight review, use one of the focused flight review scenarios from AOPA Safety Institute. So those are really good. They will set the expectation and they'll tell the pilot what to study prior and what's going to be done on the ground and in flight and what the completion standards are going to be. So there's any of this just left to chance, left up into the air. So these focused flight reviews take really the guesswork out of everything and the subjectivity out of the process. So that's what I have to say. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed this episode. We're screaming into December now. We are screaming into it. We have a CFI class coming up here on the 4th of December. I'll be leaving for the Bay Area on the 2nd. I'll be back here on the 10th, and we have a double I class the very next 3 days. So we still have a few seats in the double I class available if you're interested in that. And we also have some seats in that class for single I or CFI initial, even if you haven't taken the online course, if you've done enough pre-study. And we'd have to interview, talk about that on the phone. If you're interested in that, reach out to us at cfibootcamp.com or just me personally, mike@cfibootcamp.com. And we'll see you next week on another episode of Flight Training the Way I See It. This has been a production of Flight Training the Way I See It. News, tips, and opinion.